screens?
Yep.
So I think part of the problem is, you know, maybe I didn't sort of, I didn't tell you what the philosophy is in advance. Okay, or I did tell you, but it got, so I want to repeat it. Okay, so the point is that, well, or here is, the point is that there is AW in the middle. Okay? And there are two interpretations of AW. Okay? So, and really I'm telling you two completely, I'm trying to tell you two completely independent stories as I talk. And maybe that was a mistake. Okay? But one interpretation is it can be interpreted in terms of freely algebras. Okay, so you can interpret it as having things in ter n in it and li n and t der n and various operations that exist here have interpretations as operations that exist here. Okay, that's one side of the story. And it's completely independent from the other side of the story, or largely independent from the other side of the story. And the other side of the story is differential operators on a Lie algebra, well, really n copies of that Lie algebra. Okay?
So G is just any Lie algebra?
A finite dimensional. Okay? And again, okay, and this again has in it various elements, so functions, vector fields, flows, right? We saw flows on our first day, okay? Divergences, so the divergence of a vector field is a function, so div, and also Jacobians. So the Jacobian of a flow is again a function. A flow is not necessarily measure preserving. I mean, it may have a Jacobian. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, right, and over here there are the things that Alexei and Torossian called div, and there is something that they call J, okay, which more or less matches with the Jacobian here. Okay? Now, with this story, Now, so far, this is spaces alone. I've only told you about spaces. But there are also equations. Okay? So, namely, if I want a homomorphic expansion of Kw, so of W naughts, then this is equivalent to, I have to tell you where the basic W naughts go to, I have to tell you where the generators go, and they have to satisfy some equations. So this is equivalent to solving some equations.
Yes.
Okay? These equations can be written either in this language.
Yes.
And when you write them in this language, they become the Alexeyev-Torossian equations. So, you know, Alexeyev and Torossian write many equations, but in particular, it's the, you know what, it's the Alexeyev-Torossian equations that are equivalent by Alexeyev and Torossian to the Kashiwa-Wern conjecture.
So that's the equation, when the equation you speak about isosocial, that's the equation that involves the associator.
No, they do not involve associators. Associators come into solving these equations. Yeah. These are just equations that are equivalent to Kashiwara and Verne. Kashiwara and Verne came in, were in 78, associators were in 88 or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, the time or so, this is much before associators. Okay, these are just equations in a Frehley algebra. Or, you know, not in a Frehley algebra, but, well, essentially in these spaces. Okay, so all of this is happening here. Okay, at the same time, these equations can be interpreted here.
Yes.
Okay, and when they interpret, when they are appropriately interpreted here, they become a statement about, they become the statement which was the motivation for the Kashiwara-Verne conjecture. And it's the statement which says the following. So, you know, if you have a function f, which is a function, if f and g are functions on a group, so they belong to functions on a group G, whose Lie algebra is G, is this G, mm-hmm. Okay, you can let, so you know what, no, let me call this one capital F and capital G, okay, mm-hmm. Then, no, you know what, sorry for being so, okay, but also remember that there is a function E going from the Lie algebra to the group,
yes,
which is just the exponentiation. So this is the exponentiation. And the claim, more or less, is that if you pull back these two functions, sorry, and I want them to be invariant functions, not any functions, but invariant. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the claim is that if you pull back these two functions, so E star F is now a function on the Lie algebra.
Yes.
And E star G, it's again a function on the Lie algebra. Mm-hmm. And the claim is that their convolution on the Lie algebra...
E star F times G.
What?
E star of F plus G.
Yeah. Is the pullback of their convolution on the Lie group. Okay? Except I lied in a slight way. It's not really the pullback via the exponentiation, but rather you have to multiply by some Jacobian. I mean, other than some numerical factor, j to the 1/2, what I wrote is true. So, in particular, the two algebras, convolutions here of invariant functions here, and convolutions of invariant functions here, are isomorphic. This is the Kashiwara-Verne statement.
Yes.
Now, the relationship, very roughly speaking, is that, you see, it's an equality of integrals. At the end of the day, it's an equality of integrals, because the convolution is given by an integral. So, the way you prove it is you find a flow, you find a flow that takes one integrand to the other integrand. Okay? So you find a flow on, both of these can be interpreted at the end of the day as integrals on the Lie group, on the Lie algebra, sorry, mm-hmm. Or in fact on two copies of the Lie algebra. Well, one, sorry, but anyway, and you find a flow that takes one integrand to the other, okay? But you have to control this flow. First of all, it has to take one integrand to the other. So that's a certain equation that it has to satisfy. And second, it has to be measure preserving. Otherwise, you know, otherwise it doesn't preserve integration, so there was no point, okay? So it's Jacobian has to be something. So this amounts to, again, to some equations, okay? And my overall claim is that these equations are the same as these equations are the same as these equations, okay? And I lied in some places because, for example, I said the equation the flows have to be measure preserving. Well, they don't. The assertion is not that the integrals are equal, but that they are equal up to some factors. So it's not really that they are measure preserving, but they contract or expand the measure in a prescribed way, which is more or less the same. Okay, but in order to sort of complete this, so first of all, the two sides of the story are essentially disjoint, the way I tell them. Mm-hmm. I should say that originally, Kashiwara and Vern had gone straight from here to here. Okay, and this is the original paper of Kashiwara and Vern in 1978.
On Duflo is on office.
What?
On Duflo.
Yeah, on Duflo something. The paper in which they make their conjecture. Okay? And, but you see, I want to completely ignore this and regard this as two independent stories. So, to tell these stories, I have to do two things. I have to, or several things, okay? First of all, I have to identify all the spaces and operations here with spaces and operations here and spaces and operations here, okay? And then I have to identify the equations that you get here. First of all, I have to tell you where they come from, not theoretically, and then I have to identify them with the corresponding equations here and the corresponding equations here, and these are completely independent processes. Okay? And being a lousy teacher, I kind of mix the two processes and I'm getting confused as I speak, but that is the overall story. Is the story more or less clear?
Yes.
Okay.
Just so now, you were happy when you had about Alexei because there was a disorder formulation.
Sorry?
So, I mean, the connection between the welded object and the Kashiwara Verni was already for you clear even before Alexei Torosian paper?
No.
No. Okay.
If you're, I can tell you, I can answer a question about history.
Mm-hmm.
But it's yet another direction. It's not. It's not any of these things. So really, I didn't know anything whatsoever about W knots. I didn't even know W knots existed. I kind of invented them myself independently,
mm-hmm.
after talking to Alexei for the first time.
Okay.
And you know, short while after I talked to him for the first time, and a short while after inventing them independently, I remember that years before I heard Lou Kaufman talk about it, and quite incredibly, I had a picture of the blackboard. So I reconstructed everything from the blackboard of Lou Kaufman, and in fact I can show you the picture of the blackboard. You know, maybe for the sake of entertainment, if you oh no, that was a mistake. What I should have done is. Here, I should start right away from my website. Okay, and go to my blackboard shots, and there are currently 2,304 blackboard shots in my collection, and his is the first. Okay, but it's actually a lie because I inserted it after. Because I realized it was important. It's the first in this system of saving, but I had it before. So basically, on January the 5th, 2005 at 12:29:01, Luke, I took this photo of Lou Kaufman, and it had virtual notes and, you know, allowed move, forbidden move, you unforbid this forbidden move, right? And he said Shin Sato, and you know, Drew's his flying ring pictures. And then after that, it was just a tiny bit of Google, and I learned that the whole theory exists. You know, there was a lot about it to start with. Okay, but I actually discovered this independently. In relation to Alexeyev Dorosyan. Sorry, that's just a bit of history. Okay, it's not, but okay. Independently, because I have been to this lecture. It's just that I completely forgot about it. It was, you know, a good 8 years between. 7-8 years between.
And what was these results, by the way?
Here?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember anything about this lecture other than the content of this blackboard chalk. It was early on in the lecture. I think, in fact, he had nothing to say about W knots. Mm. For him, it was just a justification for why V knots are not entirely not uninteresting. Okay. I don't remember though. Okay. Sorry. That's just a.
No, but just for another historical reason is that it is quite difficult to show that, for example, braid embeds in the virtual braids. But since virtual braids are jacked on the welded braids, it is easy to show that the braids are a subgroup of a virtual braid.
Yeah. No, there is so, content, yes. Of course. I know. I mean, I discovered that there is content later. Okay. Anyway, so in this sort of story, okay, I'm, you know, at extremely low quality, I admit, but I'm done above this blue line. No, sorry, the blue line goes here. Essentially, okay? So I'm done telling you what... I'm done telling you about div, and I haven't told you about J, the Jacobian. Okay? And I told you about div, okay, but I'm missing the comparison of my div. Okay, so there is here a div too. I mean, here I should have added, you know, there is a U, L, div, whatever. Okay? So I'm missing the... I told you about the comparison between this div and that div.
Yes.
I didn't yet tell you about the comparison between these two divs. Mm-hmm. And that is what Emmanuel wants me to do.
Yes, shortly.
Shortly. Okay, maybe I'll
excuse
say...
Excuse me.
Yes.
I have some stupid question because I'm late. That W on A is come from Bargit, not W.
Yes.
Are there any original story on the original A, not W, such that this story is analyzed on that story?
So that would be tomorrow. So tomorrow I will tell you that there is a map from AU to AW. Mm-hmm.
What is AU?
Usual, just the usual A. Okay, so tomorrow I will tell you, just means usual. Okay? Because I had to make a distinction between U, V, and W, and U absolutely fits well with V and W, right? Okay? So, tomorrow I will tell you that there is a map from here to here, and parts of. And these equations here somehow correspond to equations here as well. Not quite correspond, but imply and are implied by. They're not quite, it's not quite correspond. But okay? But that's tomorrow. That's yet another direction. Okay. So, maybe very briefly, So I still owe Emmanuel the explanation of the two divs. Okay? Mm-hmm. So let's take a so let's take an element of tether n. Okay, and I want to show that the that div at of d is equal to div what should I call it? Maybe. W of d. Okay, div w meaning in the w calculus, mm-hmm. and div at means what Alexeyev Torossian
did.
Okay, so what is d? D is a sequence A1 up to AN of elements of the Frehley algebra. Again, modulo removing some finite dimensional uninteresting subspace. Up to some something small. Mm-hmm. Okay? But of course, I since both sides are linear, it's enough that I look at 0 AI or AK 0. Okay, so a single tree. Okay, so in other words, D is just a tree whose root is labeled K. And then it may have a, it's a Frehley element, right?
So on, okay, with N leaves.
With leaves labeled from 1 to N,
oh,
but not necessarily N leaves, it could be 7,000 leaves. Which could be more than n or less than n. Just to be clear. Okay? But, you know, in Lie algebras, trees can always be pulled tight. Namely, in Frehley algebras, namely, I could always pick one of the leaves and then look at the minimal path between it and the root. And then, if there is anything not on that path, I can use Jacobi, or IHX, which is the same, to cut this shorter. Right? I mean, I could replace this by this minus the two flipped. But in any case, I've reduced by one the number of vertices not on the stem.
Okay, yes.
How do you say stem in French?
Tige.
Okay. Now I cannot confirm or deny.
Yes, because it is a theory.
Okay.
In Italian.
So therefore, I may as well start with a tree that looks like this: xi1, xi2. You know, basically a tree that looks like a thing like that. Okay, up to x. I 8. 7,000 is too much. Okay? So now let's see what Alexeyev and Torossian do to this tree, and then let's see what W does to this tree. Okay?
Fine.
So Alexeyev and Torossian do the following. First of all, they interpret this tree as an iterated bracket. They interpret, so first of all, they map this tree to the associative algebra. So they interpret the tree as a bracket. So in other words, they look at the bracket of xi1 with xi2, then they bracket it with xi3, and so on, up to bracketing it with xi8. Of course, it fails if you change 8 to anything else. Sorry, I'm... Okay, so this is first thing they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take they take the trace of the sum of d to d x k of this, and it's in fact, sorry, not d to d x k, it's x k d to d x k of this. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, what's that? I blundered. I should have bracketed it to the right rather than to the left. But it's not so important. So, basic...
We can assume.
Yeah, I should have bracketed it to the right. So up to a sign, it's all bracket. I mean, it, in the paper, it's actually done. This part is done in the paper, and I think it's... So again, so let me just rewrite it. It's plus or minus sum xk d to d xk, and xi3 bracket xi2 bracket xi1. Okay. I've done nothing, really. Okay, I've just applied the bracket many times, okay? The anti-symmetry.
Yes.
Okay. So, here, in a number of places, for a number of indices, maybe I3 and XI6 as well, are equal to XK. Okay?
Yes.
So let's think, how could I3 find its way to the very right?
Okay.
Right? Because only when at the very right I have an xk, only then I get a contribution.
Yes.
So how could I3 get to be at the very right? The answer is, well, so, if in any of the previous brackets, right, if any of these terms end, right, like say the I mean, when you read out such an expression, you get this whole thing times the next variable, either on the left or on the right.
Yes.
If any of the previous variables end on the right, then this xi3 will not be the rightmost thing, no matter what you do.
Yes.
So the conclusion is that the only way xi3 will be on the right will be if the previous variables appear in order to its left.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get xi8 down to xi3.
Yes.
Sorry, down to xi4. And then xi3 appearing on the left, on the right. And then all of these must be pushed here. I mean, if again, if they are pushed to the right, then so in fact you get a minus. Which is irrelevant because everything is up to signs. So here you'll just get xi2, xi1. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, well, this was the case of xi3. But if I wanted to do it more, so this was a sample. If I really wanted to do it in full,
mm-hmm.
It will be a sum over all alphas such that, over all alphas such that xi alpha, so such that I alpha is equal to k.
Yes.
So over all, so the xk could have come from any of these places.
Sure.
Okay, so over all I alpha equal to k of xi 8 down to xi alpha plus 1.
Yes.
Then, xi
alpha minus 1
bracketed down to xi1.
Yes.
And then
multiply xi, xk on the left.
and then xi alpha.
On the left.
On the left. It doesn't matter because I take the trace.
Okay.
Okay?
Fine.
Okay, this is the end of the story for Alexeyev Torossian.
Yes.
Now let's do what the what div w does to the same thing. Okay?
Yes.
So div w is you again, you look at the difference between the upper embedding of this and the lower embedding of this.
Yes.
So really you have how should I draw it? Not maybe I'll draw the tree externally. So here are 1, 2, 3 the strands.
Yes.
And here is the tree.
Yes.
Okay? It has a root on strand number k, 2 is equal to k.
Yes.
And it has leaves.
Okay, yes.
In some order. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now I want to move the root to the other side. I get a summation. So which contributions do I get? I get contributions only from the places where the corresponding index is k.
Yeah.
And in these cases, I get a... Okay, so in each of these cases where I get a... When it's equal to k, when I alpha is equal to k, I will get a wheel whose... right here you see a wheel. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whose... and along this wheel, you see all the indices later than I alpha, so exactly xi8 up to xi alpha plus 1. Then you see a tree of all the indices earlier than alpha, so a tree like this, but this tree you have to collapse to the wheel using Jacobi, so that's exactly this.
Yes.
And then you keep going and you see alpha itself, and you see k itself.
Yes.
And this is this. Okay? So this is the proof. Again, up to signs and up to... And I truly hope that in the paper it's written with the sign that the signs done wrong.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. So I still have to tell you about Jacobians. Oh yeah. Do I need to? You know what? I'll say it in words, and I will not. And if proofs will be needed, we'll do them later.
Okay.
Okay. So, the point is, okay, in the Alexeyev Torossian story, there is also a globalization, so exponential map.
Mm-hmm.
So, a flow. Okay? So, okay? And it is this group which they call T ot n. So T ot n is the group whose Lie algebra is T der n. So in other words, it's the group of formal symbols e to the d, where d is an element of T der n,
mm-hmm.
where the product is given by the BCH formula. Okay?
Yes.
So this is the group that for me when I think about differential operators means flows, and for me when I think about W means group-like elements as opposed to primitive elements, so exponentials. So actual invariants, because the invariants are always not in the primitives, but in the exponentials of primitives. So T ought n means actual invariants, as opposed to just the connected components. Anyway, so they define a functional j on T ought n by j of e to the d is, you take div d according to their definition, and that's a sum of wheels, sorry, it's an element of tur n, and you let e to the d minus 1 divided by d act on it. So you interpret this as a power series in d, and d acts on tur n, because it, well, it's one of the pieces of data, so you let it, you let this act on this. So this is their j. The wj is the following. If you have d at 3, you can exponentiate its u, multiply it by e to the, exponentiate its negative l, and multiply the two things, and the claim is that the result is just an exponential of wheels, so call the exponent jd. This is the w claim, and I will have to claim that all of those are the same, but I'm still just stating. Okay, and finally, in differential operator land, if you have a vector field, you can exponentiate it. You get a flow. Okay, you can exponentiate and take the adjoint. So the adjoint of flowing in a certain direction is actually not the flow backwards. Why? Again, the adjoint of flowing in a certain direction is not flowing backwards. It's precisely flowing backwards times the Jacobian. Okay, if the how should I say that? Right, if you have a it's just a general fact. I mean, the adjoint of a change of variables is the inverse change of variables times the Jacobian.
Yes.
Because that's the meaning of the Jacobian, that integration before the change of variable is equal to to integration after the change of variables if you multiply by the Jacobian. So again, up to the distinction between the Jacobian to plus 1 or to minus 1, what I said is true. Up to the fact that nobody even remembers if the Jacobian is the... Okay. So in differential operator land, the Jacobian of a flow defined by a vector space D is you exponentiate the vector space. You do the flow, then you do the adjoint of the flow, and well, I take logarithm to match so that everything will match. But JD is really just the Jacobian of a flow. Okay. And then the claim is that all of these definitions match. Okay? And I could spend some time telling you why this is true, but I'm not sure it is, at least not on first pass. Okay? I should say, though, that there are sort of lovely... cheating way, or it's, all of those are lovely. Okay, they're not. All of these are lovely. All of the little proofs are lovely. So, if you want to know how much a flow expands, it's a flow. Right? So you want to know how much a flow expands the measure, then it's enough to know how much it expands at every infinitesimal amount of time. How much it expands at every infinitesimal amount of time is the divergence. So therefore, an equality from differential geometry is that the overall expansion factor is the integral. I mean, that's why you take the logarithm, because it's really not the sum but the prodigal. It's the product of expansion factors. So it's the integral of the divergence, which is the local expansion factor, pulled back via the flow itself to the initial position. But if you do this, so this is an equality from differential geometry. And then if you, on the other hand, if you compute this integral, the integral of e to the td is e to the d minus 1 over d. Hence this formula. Sorry, I'm just sort of suggesting that there are nice relations here. And finally, this is yet another funny trick, but maybe not now. Sorry, I don't know what to say. I mean, your job is to interrogate me. You know, you paid for me to come here. You know? if you want your money back, you have to interrogate me. Okay. So, anyway, yeah.
So, what you said, you said almost everything except J.
Sorry?
You proved almost everything. Or proved.
I proved everything and I sketched the rest.
Yes.
Okay? In fact, in some sense I've proved everything, because this clearly matches this.
Yes.
On the other hand, at least formally, it's equal to that, which is equal to the Alexeyev-Torossian definition. So you have to deformalize. Well, it's not surprising that all will work, and all will work. Okay, you know, if I had a little bit of you know, Adrian noticed that I posted a response in Math Overflow just yesterday to some question about the BCH formula. And that's roughly where it comes from. I mean, the proof that this is equal to this is very closely related to the proof of the BCH formula. But again, that's okay. Anyway, so I'm essentially done. I mean, modulo vagueness and details. Okay, I'm essentially done telling you that the spaces and operations match. Okay, so there is a sort of complete match between spaces in AW and operations on AW, and spaces of freely algebra-related things and operations on them, and differential operators on a Lie algebra, and various properties, divergence and flows and Jacobian. Okay? And what remains is I have to tell you that the equations match. Okay? So again, let's do it at a very, very vague level. Oh my God. No. Sorry, I know how to do what I want to do with my keyboard, but not with this keyboard. Anyway, so let's keep it at a very vague level. Okay, and then you tell me if you want a second pass or not. Okay, so at the very vague level, at the very vague level, I should tell you that, sorry, first of all, I should tell you that the thing for which we look for homomorphic expansion is not tangles. Rather, it's tangled graphs, tangled trivalent graphs. Okay? So you have a trivalent graph, it's also allowed to have vertices, and still you can note it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Drinfeld theory of associators is also, as a theory of braids, it's not a theory of homomorphic expansions, it's something else. If you want to view it as a theory of homomorphic expansions, it should be a theory of graphs. And that's a story to be told on its own. Okay? So what I want is to look for invariants of graphs. Okay? So the primary equation is, well, okay, so I already know what the value of the crossing will be. It will be the exponential of an arrow.
Yes.
The primary unknown is the value of the vertex.
Sure.
So call it V. The primary thing that I need to figure out is what the value of the vertex should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary equation is the Rademeister 4 move, which says that a vertex with a crossing is like two crossings and then a vertex. Okay? By the way, you're welcome to compare it with the metagroup axioms, and you'll find that it's essentially the same, or it's very similar, for no reason whatsoever. I don't know of any reason. Okay? There may be, but I don't know it. Anyway, so this is the primary equation I have to solve. Okay? Before doing so, I should tell you that the theory of knotted graphs is a triviality. That's actually another thing I once posted on Math Overflow. The theory of knotted graphs is really nothing more than the theory of tangles. Okay, so here is I didn't take a picture of this yet, right? So let me tell you a little aside. Okay, so. First of all, you might think that knotted graphs are a rich generalization of knot theory, right? Here is, or tangle theory, here is a knotted graph. Okay, this is a knotting of the tetrahedron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I claim that it's actually nothing. Okay? And the reason is the following. Whenever you have a knotted graph, you can pick a maximal tree in it. So which tree should I take? I don't know. Okay, you can pick a maximal tree. No, I haven't been to this vertex yet, so let's extend this maximal tree a bit. Okay. So now we have a maximal tree. Okay? Now a tree in knot theory is contractible. Is unknotted, not contractible. Sorry, a tree is contractible, but in knot theory it is not knotted. Okay? So I could find an isotopy that would bring the tree to some tiny unknotted thing. I don't know if this is even the right tree, but you could always take the tree and bring it to the. When I say tree, I want to go a little bit beyond the vertices. So the tree should contain a little bit of a stub from each part that it doesn't go through. Okay. So, you know, whatever the tree comes out to be, that's all it, you can shrink it to nothing. Okay? And then, sort of, the rest of the knotted tree, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it better be an even number. The rest of the knotted tree, the knotted graph, has no vertices. Okay? So now I can put this tree inside a little disk. Okay? And it's completely trivial. And the rest of the knotted graph is just these things connected to each other in some way and without vertices. So in other words, an ordinary tangle. Okay? But now do inversion. Sorry. If one of these happens to go over the tree, well, it doesn't because I shrunk the tree to be very, very small. Or if you want to slide it off. Okay? But anyway, now do inversion. Invert this tree. And, sorry, invert this disk. Okay? And what you have is a tangle inside. Right? Just some tangle inside. I mean, I'm not even pretending to draw the same tangle, but it doesn't really matter. Okay? And some tree outside.
Yes.
And it's a trivial tree on the outside.
Yes.
So actually, Emmanuel, was it you that I talked to about the ribbon graphs? So in fact, that's where the tree came from. But anyway. So really, the theory of knotted trees is the same as the theory of tangles, with a tiny bit of extra combinatorial information, which is how the sort of ends of a tangle are treed together. Okay, so there is a bit of fakery in the theory of knotted graphs. It's not really a new theory, it's just the theory of tangles plus a bit of combinatorics. Okay? And if you look at the backside of the handout that I gave you, it's sort of a project that I'm trying to promote. I hope somebody will one day make a Rolfson theory of tangles, like there is a Rolfson theory of knots. It will not be a Rolfson theory of tangles, it will be named after somebody else. Okay? But I really think it's necessary, because so much of knot theory, it would be so great if we will have a database on which to study our conjectures for tangles, just as there is one for knots and links, okay? But the reason why I never wrote, I really, really want a database of graphs is because it's the same, okay? There's just no point in, okay? Okay, so this said, nevertheless, a knotted graph carries in it exactly the information we want. So this merging of topology and combinatorics is exactly the one we need. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to do just a little bit more than tangle and not a lot more than tangles, because it's just what we need. Okay? Okay. This is the global part of the story. But there is also a local part to the story. So, if you have A, in fact, you know, could start with AU, but it's also true for AW or AV, with slightly different, minor differences apply. Okay, but let's start with AU. So, AU can be defined not necessarily for a tangle, but also for a graph. So suppose you have a graph. AU of this graph is by definition the collection of all chord diagrams that can be written on this skeleton. So just ordinary chord diagrams on top of that skeleton, instead of on top of a tangle skeleton. Mm-hmm. Okay? Modulo, the usual relations, so 4T, STU, IHX, anti-symmetry, and one new relation. And the new relation comes from, well, if you've seen a derivation of 4t, and can I assume that you've all seen a derivation of 4t? So if you've seen a derivation of 4t by lassoing a vertex, then forget this derivation, because we already know 4t, but instead lasso a vertex like this. So again, lassoing it from below is equal to lassoing it from above.
Yes.
And because you can, in both cases, you can slide out. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, the difference is the sum of three double points. So this will lead to the vertex invariance relation, Vi. Yes. Okay? And the vertex invariance relation says that if you have a vertex and a chord, sorry, I guess I, for the skeleton I'm using red, so I should keep it red. So if you have a vertex in the skeleton, then the sum of the three ways of connecting a chord to near its near the vertex is equal to zero. So the sum, this plus this plus this, is equal to zero. Okay? This is with signs, okay? I mean, the signs are dependent on the orientation and blah, blah, blah. But it's not interesting, okay? The point is that this space, okay, now you can do at the level of chord diagrams exactly what you had done at the global level. Meaning, find a maximal tree. Find a maximal tree. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And every chord that is not on the maximal tree, every chord end that is not on the maximal tree, no, the opposite. Every chord end that is on the maximal tree can be pushed off. Basically, you start from this chord end and you bring it near this vertex, and then it's equal to connecting it to here plus connecting it to here by the vertex invariance relation, up to signs. So you could push it off, and then you push this one off, and then you push this one off, so you will push it to here, and then it will become a sum where one side connects to here and the other side connects to here. This side you're happy because it's outside the maximal tree. The other tree side you have to keep pushing. Basically, you can push it off the maximal tree.
Yes.
Which is the same as what we did here. Kind of, we push all the knottedness off the maximal tree. So now we push all the combinatorics off the maximal tree. And therefore, the result is a chord diagram drawn on the complement of the maximal tree, which is just a bunch of lines. So this is isomorphic to AU of just a bunch of lines, and the number of lines is equal to the is equal to the number of edges not in the maximal tree. Which, by the way, is called the homology of the graph, or something like that. Okay? So, for example, at some point I will assert that an associator is really the Concievich integral of a tetrahedron. And the Concievich integral of a tetrahedron has values in chord diagrams with skeleton or tetrahedron, but this is the same as A3, which is the usual place where you see an associator. So in that sense.
But the isomorphism is not canonical.
The isomorphism, well, for AU, the isomorphism is canonical once you have chosen a maximal tree. So you have to choose a maximal tree. But otherwise, there are other, you know, a priori there are other choices, like in which order do you get rid of the vertices?
Yes.
Do you clean the tree? A priori it depends on how you clean the tree. But I assert that at the end it does not depend on how you clean the tree.
It remains dependent on the choice.
It does depend on the choice of the tree, yes. So in fact, I was careful to choose this tree for the tetrahedron. Had you chosen, there are actually only two, on a symmetric tetrahedron,
yes,
there are only two maximal trees. There is the one that looks like a line, and the one that looks like a Y graph. I mean, all the others are equivalent by symmetries of the tetrahedron. If you choose the Y graph, like if you choose this tree,
yes,
like you could, you still get a value for the tetrahedron on A3, but it will be A of this, this, and that strand,
yes,
and then it's not an associator. It's a different element in A3 which satisfies different equations, which are equivalent to the equations of an associator, because it's just a sort of change of variables, but it's still not an associate. It's not the usual equations of an associator. Okay? Okay. So why did I tell you all this? Okay, sorry. There are similar stories for V and W. Okay? And the reason I told you all of this is because I wanted to state that the value of the vertex,
mm-hmm,
well, I mean, I did something vastly more general than was strictly necessary. The value of the vertices of the vertex is not a core diagram on, an arrow diagram on a skeleton which is a Y graph, because you can clean one of the legs of the Y graph, and instead you get that the value of the vertex is a core diagram on a skeleton which is just two strands, namely the two bottom legs of the vertex. Okay? So therefore the diagrammatic statement corresponding to there exists a homomorphic expansion for W trivalent graphs,
mm-hmm,
is, or W trivalent tangles, is just that there exists a V in AW of two strands, such that V placed here times R placed above,
mm-hmm,
but again, placing the R above, you can just slide it down. So it's really placing sort of a some of the arrow heads that appear here. Arrow heads or tails? Tails. Some of the arrow tails that appear here get moved here, and some get moved here, but it's still just placed on these two lines. So it's the equality that V here and R here is equal to V here and another, and one copy of R here and another copy of R here. How did it go?
Okay. Thank you.
Good.
So I'm sorry if I everything is sort of canonical. You're led to everything. Now there are no kind of choices, but there is still a lot of canonical things to learn, and it looks hard. Okay. Yes.
So, I don't know. So this is really the only in this V world where over and under are not quite the same.
What?
We really have to consider this only move with the vertex, and also the overpassing version.
The other move is trivial somehow.
The other move is trivial.
In W, the other move is trivial.
So that's consistent.
So really, there is only this Rider-Meister move. Yeah, I mean, the other move, I can explain why it's trivial, but it's trivial. So again, at this point, I'm ignoring
the green equations. Okay, I'm only talking about the, again, the green equations are for second pass. Okay, but okay, this is the point where I have to split. Okay, I have one diagrammatic equation, and I could either go to the Alexeyev-Torossian part side and tell you why it's equivalent to the Alexeyev-Torossian equations, or I could keep going and push it to become an algebraic statement, and then to a statement about unitary operators, and then eventually to a statement about convolutions.
I just have kind of stupid questions. So,
are
you saying that this diagrammatic equation you're writing down, is it a condition you're looking for the existence of some homomorphic expansion?
Yeah.
Or are you claiming that the somehow easy homomorphic expansion for W breaks extend to W graph and leads to this relation?
No. These are the equations. I'm not saying a word about how to solve them.
Okay.
Okay? How to solve them... I'm only asserting having a homomorphic expansion for W graphs is equivalent to finding such V, and finding such V is equivalent to Alexeyev-Torossian Kashiwara-Wern. Not equivalent. No, to Alexeyev-Torossian it's equivalent, and Kashiwara-Wern, it depends exactly what you mean by what exactly you want from Kashiwara-Wern.
Samara, are you using here somewhere the fact that a homomorphic expansion for W bread is somehow easy? Or
no, it's not easy.
Well,
finding a homomorphic expansion for W braids is easy.
Yeah, because
but W braids is not enough.
Yeah, sure, but
I need W trivalent
graphs. There is no relation with the homomorphic expansion for even through kind of BTH formula or something. There is no relation between
which formalism?
BTH.
BCH.
No.
Solving for V is a hard problem. It's the problem that was open for 20-something years, or more, 25 years, I don't know, called the Kashiwara-Wern problem.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not at all easy.
No, I'm not claiming it. I'm just trying to understand if there is a direct relationship with the expansion for grade or not. For the W grade, I mean.
No.
I suggest a little break.
Okay. Let's have a break.
Okay. So.